Meadows would have to go into hiding before long. The tables would turn. Soldiers would spend the daylight hours hunting them. During our conversation, we had heard several remote screams. Yeah. As I was about to leave, I observed, shouldn't most of the stupid ones, the ones who didn't want to do the work or to inconvenience themselves, be dead by now? I expect so. I imagine the shadows are learning from their successes, though, and their failures. Shaking, I went out into the night. Clouds masked the stars. I could see nothing but the occasional flight of a fireball and the glow atop Overlook's remaining lighted towers. I listened for crows and owls and bats, for rats and mice. I heard none of those. There was no noise anywhere that was not of human origin. Shadows found non-human life nearly as tasty as human, and a whole lot less difficult about being hunted. A breeze had begun to blow. I sniffed the air, considered the overcast. Looked like we were going to get some rain. I descended into my own dugout. Inside I found Tai Dei huddled beside the fire, pallid for Nguyen Bao, obviously frightened. Weird. I had trouble picturing him being scared of anything. I told him, we'll be fine here. This candle will keep out any shadows that get through the spells one eye spread around outside. I did not mention the standard. He didn't need to know. I tossed him the amulet Croker had given me. For insurance. You wear that, you can go anywhere safely. I'll go nowhere till the sun is high in the sky. I like your attitude. Shows good sense. I'm exhausted. I need to get some rest before I collapse. I looked around. Where's your mother? Tai Dei shook his head. I don't know. I wouldn't know where to start looking if I could summon the courage to rid myself of the cold water that has replaced my bones. She isn't out there with Uncle Doge, is she? Concerned? Tired? I spoke without thinking. Tai Dei was not so frightened and worried that he missed my slip. Uncle Doge? Why pretend? Oh, I know he's prowling around out there. I saw him the other night. Him and Mother Goda were prancing through the ruins of Kialune, doing who knows what the hell why, or maybe hell knows what the who. What's he up to? I'm sure he wasn't looking for plunder Mogaba's and the prince's men missed. Tai Dei just looked at me. Maybe a hint of a smile tried to break through. It didn't last. Will that candle last all night? Evidently, he could become mildly talkative if he was scared and worried. It'll last a lot of nights. I'm going to crap out. If it makes you more comfortable, put on the amulet and sit next to the candle. Just don't move it. It has to block the doorway. Tai Dei grunted. He had the amulet on his wrist already and was back at full worry. I said, we'll look for your mother first thing. Now that there was a chance she was dead, I was concerned. Result of a whole lot of boyhood teaching that insisted that even the most hated member of your family was immeasurably precious. And there was some truth to that. Who will watch your back, if not family? It's the same here in the company. The most loathsome, most despicable of my brothers has to be of more value to me than any outsider. On one level, we're a big, ugly family. There are, of course, rare exceptions. Bullies and assholes so bad, they've just gotta be fragged. That hasn't happened in a long time. I would look for my mother-in-law, even though I'd wished her away at least 100,000 times. I wasn't yet all the way horizontal when sleep overcame me. Chapter 69. I dreamt, of course. Awake or asleep, I spent most of my life in dreamlands. I was in the place of bones. Some great force troubled the plain. The bones themselves drifted on tides and currents. Scattered skeletons pulled themselves together, rose up and wandered aimlessly for seconds or minutes before falling apart again. Skulls turned to stare wherever I floated. Crows cawed drunkenly from perches in the few enwintered trees, afraid to fly because their equilibrium was all off, and every straight flight nevertheless warped groundward, where the stricken bird flopped and struggled against the bones like a moth caught in a spider's web. Dark clouds scurried across what had always been iron-gray skies. The wind was icy, Gusts made the bones rattle. The smell of Kina was strong, but I didn't see her. There was something behind me, though. I just couldn't turn fast enough to find out what. Turning did inform me that I had some control, which I exercised immediately by wishing myself out of that place. Naturally, the move failed to be an improvement. I went to the caverns of ice and old men. Those ancients made no sound, but they were bickering. Something was in the wind. The smell of Kina was strong there too, but she was nowhere to be seen. Some of those old boys had their eyes open. They watched me as I passed. Again, I had the feeling that there was something behind me, but saw nothing when I looked back. I did have control. I followed the tunnel, eventually reached the place where the books of the dead rested upon their lecterns. The first, which the Daughter of Night had been transcribing, was now open to a page near the beginning. The stink of Kina was particularly strong there. I had no business in that place. There was nothing I wanted there, except out. I tried to recall how I had gotten away last time. By just wanting to do it badly enough, I guess. Darkness came. It reminded me of something Narayan Singh said one time. Darkness always comes. It seemed I was in the darkness a long time. Fear began to build. I reflected on just how right Narayan had to be. Though it might wear 1,000 different names and 1,000 different times and might come from 1,000 different directions, darkness always comes. When the light came back, I found myself way up high above everything again. So high up, I was above the clouds that had been moving in as I headed for bed, leaving me at the mercy of those unfamiliar stars. I picked out the ghoulish dagger constellation in the north, took a guess at the direction I'd followed before, put on all the speed I could, and dived into the clouds. In moments I was down where treetops whisked right under where my love handles would have hung had I had any belly at all. I thought I could learn to enjoy this, if I could just get rid of the feeling that something was close behind me and gaining. There were no lights down there this time. The whole world smelled of fear, as though every rock and animal and tree sensed something dire about to happen. I located a village. The entire population was wide awake, despite the hour. They huddled in frightened clumps, babies clutched tightly, livestock gathered into their homes with them. They didn't talk much. The children whimpered. How could they know what was happening at Overlook? Was there some prophecy or something that said tonight was the night the Shadow Gate would go down? Had there been signs and portents unseen by me? Did they know anything at all? Maybe their terror had nothing to do with Shadow Masters or the Black Company. I streaked onward. Far, far ahead, the occasional spark flipped into the sky. Those had to be the home fires burning. The quarrel with the shadows wasn't over. It was a long night. The Shadow Gate had not collapsed. Not yet. Long Shadow was still alive. I recalled having no problems getting close to any She is the Darkness when I didn't have smoke along. I headed for the flickering remnant of Long Shadow's crystal chamber. Soulcatcher was on her feet and, in nasty form, carping at Howler. The screaming wizard hardly knew where he was.
"Come on, you worthless ball of rags!"
Catcher raged in a fishwife's voice.
"We've got to get out of here before my beloved sister realizes the lovely chance she's missing."
Her darling sister was on her way already, thanks to me. I was surprised she was taking so long. She seemed to have grown cautious in the last hour. Of course, she did have to slither through a long tunnel, then wander around a dark fortress, then make a long climb, all the while making sure no little shadows jumped on her back. Howler let out a groggy, interrogative sort of cry. He wasn't yet clear on where he was or how he'd gotten there. He concentrated on getting his feet back under him. Catcher had to keep her back clean, too. She cast some little spell that sent a worm of light slithering into all the dark places in that tossed salad of a chamber. It rooted out several tiny shadows. They evaded the light easily. Soulcatcher cursed. "Damned thing isn't fast enough." The shadows darted at Long Shadow, who was in far worse shape than Howler. He was, however, more in touch with what was happening around him. He whispered a cantrip before the darknesses reached his shell. The little shadows spun and went after the invaders. The battle would not end while he was alive, apparently. He was a stubborn shit. Soulcatcher cuffed Howler around the ears. The fishwife shrill insisted,
"Come on! This place is going to be your death if we don't get..."
She sensed imminent danger. Lady was not far away now.
"It's her!"
New voice. Baffled, frightened, childlike.
"How does she dare? She can't have any real powers anymore. It doesn't work that way!"
Lady was in the stairwell now. She did not seem afraid of a confrontation with her little sister at all. She carried a bundle of short bamboo poles. So did the dozen men behind her. They would be able to launch a small blizzard of fireballs. Those at the rear of the party backed up the steps. They kept poles ready to discharge at anything coming up behind them. The smell of fear grew stronger than the lingering perfume of Kina. Soulcatcher thumped Howler a few more times, trying to get him to come alert. He remained too groggy to be much use. She turned to the doorway. With some small but well-chosen spell, she sealed it, then resumed trying to get Howler into shape for a flying escape. The small shadows had gone into hiding again. The door began to glow. Its surface rippled colorfully according to the hue of the fireballs hitting its far side. Soulcatcher produced a knife and slit Howler's clothing. I didn't understand till she found what she was looking for. That proved to be a piece of silk, 4 feet by 6 when she spread it, and a little bundle of sticks. The silk rectangle became almost rigid when she spoke a certain word. It floated up off the floor like it was floating on the surface of a gently rippling pool. Soulcatcher broke the bundle of sticks and assembled them into a framework on which she stretched the silk. She muttered as she worked. The whole thing seemed much too fragile, but in a minute she grabbed the Daughter of Night and clambered aboard. The carpet sagged, but held their weight. Sputtering, jerking like he was having a seizure, Howler staggered toward his stolen emergency conveyance. I wondered if this was his final secret, or if he still had more flying tricks up his sleeves. I bet it was something like that piece of silk that got him out of dying, back when they thought he'd crashed at high speed into the side of the tower at Charm. Soulcatcher did something incredibly violent. Most of the tower top vanished inside a globe of white light. The flare was so brilliant, it betrayed every shadow slithering through the night, but temporarily blinded half the men trying to exterminate them. When the light faded, a third of the tower's crystal roof no longer existed. Soulcatcher snagged Howler by the hair, dragged him onto the carpet, said some word that started the tiny thing moving. It began to sink almost immediately. It barely cleared the turret. Then it went down, down toward the unfriendly folks and unfriendlier shadows, hunting one another amongst the rocks below. Catcher did not want to go down there, but the carpet was overloaded. It was designed to help the runt get out of a tight spot, not him and all his friends and neighbors. The smell of Kina grew stronger again. The whirlwind of rage was coming back for one more try. The goddess did not want her daughter carried off. The brat's eyes were closed inside her egg. That had proven to be flexible and slick when Soulcatcher was slinging it around. The kid's face bore that serene expression she got when she was communing with Kina. Lady and her cohorts burst into the chamber where Long Shadow and Narayan Singh still groaned and twitched. Fireballs routed the small shadows instantly. Seconds later, a stream of fireballs reached down for Catcher and her companions. None hit home, but they did alert our troops that something was on the fly. Anything that flew would not be friendly. Kina's interest and anger heightened fast. A hurricane screamed in the ghost world. Her stench leaked over into the real world. Men heaved up their last meals. The sky darkened more than the night and clouds insisted. The earth shook. The throne shudders and slips 1/1000 of an inch. The tortured figure groans. Its blind eyes flutter. One crow cackles. The bird fails to recall that it dares not rest. Its claws touch down atop the sleeper's head. Before its wings finish folding, it begins to scream. Small shadows have found it. They squabble over its life force joyfully. The earth shivers. There is no silence anymore. Stone is broken. It continues to break. The light in the abyss is brighter. Pastel, gossamer mists rise like the questing tentacles of a sea anemone. There is color. There is life of a sort. There is light. There is death. The crow shrieks out its pained outrage and dies. Death will find a way. Darkness will find a way inside. Darkness always comes. Chapter 70. It took me a while to realize that the shaking was neither imaginary nor metaphorical. The earth was shaking. This was a genuine, badass earthquake, as nasty as the one that had destroyed Kialune and much of the Shadowlands back before we headed south. Panic filled the air of the ghost world, apparently a divine panic on Kina's part. Her stink took on a whole new air. Whoever heard of a god being scared? Fireballs continued to scar the night. I watched Lady and her people stagger around as they collected Sing and Longshadow. They were extremely careful with both. Lady knew just how dangerous each could be. She'd been both in her time. She wanted to hurl some special farewell after her sister, but before she could get a spell woven, an aftershock rattled the fortress. Pieces began to fall off the battered tower. Lady decided it might be an opportune time to head downstairs and get out to ground where things were less likely to fall on her. I decided it would be a good time to get back out and talk to Croker. Then I recalled that I wasn't riding Smoke now, so I didn't have that kind of control. I could not force myself awake. I decided to stick with Soulcatcher and her companions. It would be useful to know where she settled down to regain control enough to surround herself in mists and repulsions again. For a second, as I went over the lip of the tower into the abyss of night, I thought I felt Smoke whiningly trying to shy away from the tower. Maybe I was getting too accustomed to being close to that little chicken shit. The smell of Kina grew stronger, faded, grew stronger, as though the goddess was hunting blindly. Her anger never abated. Soulcatcher managed to nag Howler awake enough to lend a hand keeping the carpet aloft. As soon as he had half his wits collected, they began bickering. They must have gotten loud because the fireballs began streaking much closer. Those things had a power that extended beyond the mortal plane, that was sure. I found out the hard way by giving in to a childish temptation. I allowed one to go zipping through what roughly was my body space. The pain was terrible. I felt what the shadows must feel when hit. But the fireball did not attach itself to me the way it did the shadows, though its momentum did drop dramatically enough for me to notice even in my agony. I was not going to pull that damn fool trick again. Catcher and Howler almost evaded me after I began to watch the fireballs too closely. But those that darted up after Howler's racket kept her trail warm. She was heading for that same canyon where she had holed up all winter. It was unlikely that she would stay there long, though. We knew where it was. I caught up. I could make some time out there when I concentrated. Maybe I got too close. Soulcatcher seemed suddenly to realize that she was being watched. She stopped the carpet and spun it around. Even in the darkness, I could feel the intensity of her glare. "Howler," she snapped. "Do you feel something strange?" Bad move, that. It encouraged the stinky little wizard to open his mouth. A grand howl ripped out when he did. Catcher had stopped right above some of the Prabhrendra Dra's fugitives. They were very nervous men. The first fireballs up illuminated the carpet well enough for other snipers to take better aim. Hardly had Howler gotten his mouth under control than a fireball winged him. He shrieked again and lost his concentration. The carpet began to slide toward the ground. Soulcatcher cursed in a cranky old man's voice, fought it. A fireball nearly parted her raven hair. Enraged, she opened her mouth to pronounce some deadly retribution. The carpet began to fall. Catcher shrieked in frustration, threw out a booted foot, and pushed Howler off the edge of the carpet. He yelled angrily. Catcher grumbled an unfriendly goodbye. The carpet stopped falling. Muttering control spells, Catcher got it moving again. The boys on the ground never stopped sniping. A fireball passed through the carpet between Soulcatcher and the Daughter of Night. Kina, while unable to catch up and hammer Catcher, seemed to be aware of events. A whirlwind of rage filled the shadow world. A glimmer of the multi-armed idol began to show through on our side. It never coalesced completely, but did materialize enough to send the Taglian loyalists running whatever direction they happened to be facing. Howler howled. He plummeted toward the earth. He was always a lucky little shit, and his luck held now. First he plunged through the branches of some heavy evergreens. They whipped the pudding out of him but slowed his fall. Then he smashed into a hillside still covered with unmelted snow. That was deep enough that he vanished into it. I had not one doubt that he would be up and dancing like a dervish before lunchtime, and likely in a mood to show Soulcatcher just how much he loved her. I sniffed around for a few minutes, marking the spot. Howler did nothing. I figured I had better go try to wake up. This looked like a once-in-a-lifetime chance, either to recruit a first-line wizard or to put him out of our misery forever. I suspected Croker would prefer the latter option. We'd had too many unfriendly encounters with the Howler over the years. Did I mention Howler's luck? I couldn't wake up. Evidently, my spirit had no power over my body when that wanted to sleep. It looked like I had to keep wandering, want to or not. I recalled last year, when I had gone off without even being asleep. When Soulcatcher somehow pried me loose by means unknown and for a purpose I never divined, which she might do to me again, particularly if anything I had done lately had caught her attention. There was a good chance the whole thing had been just a game to her, something to while away some time while fragments of her scheme fell into place. Or maybe she'd been experimenting, or both things, and maybe more. What we know for sure about Catcher is that she walks in chaos, and her motives are changeable. I must be driven. I figured that as long as I had to stay out there, I ought to keep scouting around, working in my sleep. Ought to have the old man double my pay. How much is two times a stab in the back? The prince was making good time. He was headed straight up the road north, which was the only reason I found him. A whole mob of his guys were running with him, and they did keep moving briskly. Shadows lurked around them like wolves on the hunt for dangerous game. It was a running fight. The prince's men didn't have many bamboo poles, but whenever one of the crowd began shrieking, he died of fireballitis before the attacking shadows could finish their cruel work. I wasted no time looking for Mogaba or Goblin. Too much work to find them. Maybe after it got light, which it ought to be starting by now, only the clouds were so heavy. I headed back toward Overlook. Everywhere I went, I saw evidence of the latest earthquake. Landslides, toppled trees, a collapsed bridge the Southerners had rebuilt after the last quake, then had cast down so we couldn't use it, so Cletus and his brothers had had to put it up again. And lots of shelters knocked over or fallen in, and cracks in the ground. And even some damage to Overlook, up where Long Shadow had bickered with his pals and then everybody had quarreled with Kina. As I closed in, a large block of white stone slipped out of Long Shadow's tower and plunged toward the foot of the wall. Several more followed quickly. The tower seemed to wobble slightly, as if made of gelatin instead of stone. Then I realized I was seeing an aftershock in progress, or maybe a trembler even bigger than the last. Shit. Was the whole damned fortress going to come tumbling down? Lady and her crew were still inside. No, not possible. No earthquake was going to lay Overlook low. It was just too massive. Practically speaking, there was hardly anywhere for it to fall, since it was more stone than empty volume. Long Shadow's workbenches and mystery engines began to shift. Chapter 71. A jet of white fire spurted skyward, ripped open the bellies of the low-hanging clouds. Even in the ghost world, I could hear the roar of energy being released. Crystal near the jet vanished in blue puffs. Farther away, it melted and ran like candle wax. It dripped. I saw a glob plummet into a pail of water, sizzle. Right then, I decided that if I survived, I would climb that tower, if it survived, and claim that marble as a souvenir. The jet faded from white to yellow to red, then went dark, but the heat was still there, squirting away less violently for a while. The Shadow Mastered had a lot of power stashed atop that tower. Everything burnable in the remains of the chamber was now on fire. Several small shadows scuttled hither and yon. They seemed unwilling to leave despite the disaster. Maybe they were domesticated. The first raindrops fell. Those passing through the invisible energy jet sizzled into steam. I was thinking about going down inside the fortress to check on Lady, and having no luck convincing myself, when one of the shadows decided it might be happier hitting the trail. The trail it chose was the one Lady had to have taken with her prisoners. An entire section of my mind devoted itself to speculating about the futures of Long Shadow and Narayan Singh. Narayan's prospects, I feared, were particularly bleak. I followed the shadow. I didn't want to do that, but I felt compelled. It might sneak up on Lady and the guys. It might be devoted to its master. It might want to help him get away. I sort of chuckled at the image of Long Shadow trying to run, busted up the way he was. I had no sympathy for the guy. I tried sensing Lady's presence ahead, could not. And I could not go anywhere in a straight line, of course. I still could not walk through walls, which meant I suffered the same constraints as shadows. Did that mean I could go anywhere shadows could? Did it mean shadows could go anywhere I could? That was troubling. There was no light inside Overlook, nor any sound or landmarks. I changed my mind about finding Lady quickly. I can have nightmares about darkness and tight places, even when I'm awake. I turned back. Insofar as I was aware, there had been no branchings to make me lose my way. I ran into a shadow, head-on. There was no source of light but the forge where the torturer heated his instruments. That flickered, illuminating the creased, weathered, bronze face of the frightened little man who had not become a soldier because he wanted to, but because he believed he owed his gods a service when they demanded it. Like all his own people, and as their enemies did also, he hoped his own gods were strongest and would prevail. It was one slice of nightmare, 2 seconds long, filled with information so alien, most would never make sense to me. I wasn't sure I should assume that the shadow I'd encountered actually connected with a man who'd been tortured to death after having been captured in some religious war. No religion in these parts worked that way. Not even the Deceivers did, though they had tortured some victims in ages past in the Grove of Doom during their Festival of Lights. My encounter with the shadow had not been that bad, really. I didn't think collisions would be troublesome as long as I was ghostwalking, but it probably would have been a fatal meeting had it come while I was in my own body. The incident did leave me goofy and disoriented. I floated back up to the remnants of the crystal chamber. The place had cooled down. The light had gone dead. But there was another light in the world now, despite the overcast. Daylight was coming at last. Just as I realized that night's siege was ending, a final small volley of fireballs erupted near the Shadow Gate. Then the world went still, and for a few minutes, nobody and nothing was killing anybody or anything anywhere within sight. I looked south and reflected that there was no smoke to keep me from going over there and taking a peek. And shadows did not bother me in this state. And if they did try, why, they behaved like rodents. No matter how big and ferocious, they stayed close to the surface. They wanted to be able to get into hiding quickly, and I could fly. I started southward. I really did. But something happened. The earth shook again. Lightning struck Overlook only a dozen feet away. Tai Day woke me up. The effect was, I headed south, but something grabbed me by the scruff of the neck, and I spun northward like a leaf snatched up by a dust devil. I don't want to get up, I told the hand abusing my repose. I'm tired. I worked all night. I was tired. I had worked all night. Hard. I did want to roll over and snooze for another 8 hours. Tai Day poked me again. And then there was the other problem. Maybe a bigger problem. My feet were wet. I pushed myself up onto one elbow as Tai Day told me, "You must get up!" I hate to admit it. You're right. I gotta get up. I had to get up because rainwater was running in the stream, turning the floor to mud. I banged my head against the log. What the hell? The overhead had fallen halfway in. The far wall had collapsed. The only reason I could see anything was that Tai Day had brought a candle, the shadow repeller, when he came to visit. What happened?
Earthquake.
Oh, yeah. It hadn't occurred to me that I could become a disaster victim, too. By the time I got my knees under me, I saw that Tai Day must have done a lot of work just to get to me. I was in a pocket. Most of our dugout must have fallen in. Mother Goda, I asked. I had shifted to Yueng Bao without thinking.
I don't know, he responded in the same language. She never came home.
His voice had an uncharacteristic edge. The strain was getting to him. Every few years he cracked and stopped being the Iceman for minutes at a time. How'd you get in?
Well, the roof fell in.
I had the duck walk to look at the hole. Yeah, I could see where he'd squeezed his way in. There was some ugly gray sky out there. It was drizzling still. Tai Day was about half my size, though. I'm going to have to stay down here for a couple of months before I can get through that. I shouldn't have put on all that weight after we got out of Dejigori. We had looked bad back then, like walking skeletons, most of us. I wondered if that had anything to do with my dreams.
Take the candle. I'll go up and make the hole bigger.
My bodyguard. This was about the first time he ever had a real chance to save my ass, and it was from being smothered by a vicious sod roof. He pushed himself up into the opening. He wiggled. He squirmed. He dropped back down.
You need to push me.
Too many snacks while we were sitting around here bullshitting?
Go.
I set the candle aside very carefully. It had become very important to me. I did not want to be down there in that tight, cold, wet place without a light. I grabbed his legs and pushed. There must have been enough water in the hole to lubricate it. He popped through. I chuckled at a mental image of the earth giving birth to that ugly little man, like some clay devil in the Goonie myths. I heard voices. Something blocked the dirty light. Croaker called,
"Hey, deadbeat, you still breathing down there?"
"I'm fine. I was thinking about taking a nap."
"You might as well. We're going to be a while getting you out."
"All right, I'll be fine."
As long as the candle lasted. I looked at it. It had a lot of life left. Those things were designed to last. I began to think about what Tai Day had had to do to come down into a place where shadows might be hiding just to see how I was doing. And that made me wonder that much more about the landscape of his interior world. Maybe I was a sloppy thinker. Or maybe just not yet experienced enough at being Yueng Bao. I couldn't even work out how to treat Tai Day like he was several different, distinct characters. He and Yueng Bao believed he owed me a debt so great he'd devoted his life to protecting me. He would lay that, and maybe even his soul, down for me. But at the same time, he would willingly lie to and deceive the foreigner who was a cause for shame on his family. And certainly, he would tell a soldier of darkness nothing that might cast any light upon Yuan Bao's attitudes toward the Black Company. Come to think of it, not even my darling beloved Sari had gone that far. She could always change the subject without appearing to have done so. I said something to the hole, but nobody answered. Well, screw them. I was tired. I sat down on the deepening mud and did go back to sleep. I didn't go anywhere. I didn't do anything but sleep. Chapter 72. I was a terrible mess when prisoners from the Prince's division hauled me out of the ground. Otto and Hagop, who belonged with the old division, and whom I hadn't seen since Tarandaprash, came to stare down at me.
"Looks like one of them mole-rat things they got down here,"
Otto said.
"Only filthier. It wasn't raining out, I'd say get a bucket of water and throw it on him."
"Comics," I muttered. "You just gave away why you signed on. Your only way to get out of town ahead of an audience turned ugly."
"His disposition's improved since the last time we saw him,"
Hagop observed.
"He don't let these little setbacks bother him anymore."
"How you guys been keeping? We don't get a lot of personal news over here." Hagop frowned. Otto said,
"A nick here, a ding there. Nothing serious."
Practically ever since I met them, one or both had been recovering from some kind of wound. It was what they were known for. They were icons, practically. Otto and Hagop could not be killed, only injured. And as long as they stayed alive, the Black Company would survive. Hagop said,
"We were sent over with a bunch of stuff for the old man and some stuff for you to put in the annals. Names."
"Oh." Croker and I always tried to record the names of our fallen brethren the best we could. A lot of guys counted on it. Once they were gone, it would be the only evidence that they'd ever lived. It was immortality of a sort.
"Lot of names,"
Hagop persisted.
"Hundreds. Last night was not a good night for the old division."
"You going to be able?"
Otto asked.
"Is everything buried down there in the mud?"
"It is. But I was more careful with the annals and that stuff than I was with me. I kept them in a room with logs for the walls and floor and ceiling, with drainage and everything, just in case. I figured the Shadow Master would be the problem, though." "Hundreds of names, really? Any I know?"
"They're just all on a list."
"I'll have to add them on at the back of the volume I'm doing now. If there were hundreds, they would be recent enlistees, their names likely unknown to me. They would be recorded on a payroll somewhere, but that had nothing to do with me." Ty Day materialized. I hadn't noted his absence till he did. He said,
"My mother was all right."
He didn't sound real sure about that, though.
"Oh. They found her in the wizard's hole when they dug him out, which was why they were so long getting to you. Your captain knew you were all right. He did not know if the wizard was dead or alive."
He meant One Eye, I realized. Well, of course, if the quake had been bad enough to overcome the fine craftsmanship Ty Day and I put into our place, then One Eye's place couldn't be anything but a rainwater pool by now. She was in One Eye's dugout? Embarrassed, whispering because there were other Yuan Bao around, Ty Day admitted,
"They were both dead drunk, passed out in their own vomit. Didn't even know the roof had fallen in till the rescuers pulled them out."
"I'm sorry," I told him, "but I'm just going to have to laugh." It came on me hard. It was more than just picturing those two getting plots together. It was the release of all the stress from last night. Otto and Hagop stared at the slopes to the south, restraining their own amusement. I suffered another laugh seizure. I realized that, before lunch, word would be all over what was left of the army. Undoubtedly, it would suffer severe exaggeration and would evolve into some prurient epic before it reached our most remote outpost. The slope that had been the home of the headquarters group had turned into 30 acres of pockmarks. Hardly a dugout had survived. Prisoners were digging in a dozen different places. I spotted one familiar face, then another, directing rescue teams. So, she didn't stay mad at them.
What?
Tide asked. Nothing, just thinking out loud. Speak of the devil. There she came out of the old man's bunker, which had survived unscathed. Croker was right behind her. Neither looked rested. But they sure looked pleased with themselves. I grumbled inarticulately, deep in my throat. My wife was half a world away. Croker ambled over.
Time for your annual bath, Murrigan.
If I just stand here in the rain long enough. Lady stared a hole through me. She wanted to interrogate me, but not now, not here, not in front of so many people who didn't need to hear my answers because half of them didn't themselves know where their loyalties lay. I asked, how bad did we get hurt last night? Croker shuddered. Maybe some cold rainwater got inside his collar.
I don't know yet. Lady has almost 2,000 people she still can't account for.
They keep turning up, though, she said, joining us. I imagine we'll find most of them, eventually. Probably dead. I said, Otto and Hagop say we lost a big chunk of the old division. Croker nodded.
They brought a list. It's way longer than I hoped. We still don't have anything useful from the other divisions.
The new division is still disorganized, and the princes fell apart completely. Did you have something you wanted to say in private?
You have that look.
Yes. Smoke rose from the crude chimney of Croker's shelter. Warm sounded good. I would make up something to tell him if I had to. I joined him in the warmth with no remorse and little sympathy for the guys I had left out in the rain. Lady followed us inside. She wore a smug but hungry look. Lady had one of Croker's rough maps spread before the fire.
Can you pinpoint where he went down?
She meant the howler.
Maybe we can still catch him if he was hurt bad.
What's that? The old man asked when I mumbled.
Ah, I said, you never stop tempting trouble, do you?
Lady did not turn me into a toad, nor even one of Otto's ugly little mole rats. She was in a good mood this morning, as opposed to last night. Smoke groaned. He startled me, though it was his second groan since I'd come into Croker's shelter. I glanced that way. The curtain was open. Long Shadow and Narayan Singh had been stacked in the alcove with the stricken wizard. I couldn't imagine Lady and the old man fooling around with that crew piled up only a few feet away, but it was obvious that they'd taken complete advantage of their opportunity. I was mildly surprised Lady would turn her prisoners over, even to her old man. Long Shadow represented a great opportunity to gain power, and Singh, Lady owed Singh a lot, but so did the captain. Maybe they would make a family project out of Narayan. She asked fewer questions than I expected, mainly about Smoke's limitations. I didn't mention that I was developing an ability to travel without the comatose wizard. She didn't ask. Croker, though, noted that I knew about Howler, even though I'd been in my own bunker during the Taken's run of bad luck.
I'll send Blade, she decided. He's level-headed. He can get a job done without getting himself or Howler killed.
I wanted to ask how Blade and Swan had slithered back into her favor, but management decisions were none of my business. I had had Lady explain that to me already, emphatically, regarding another matter. She left to offer Blade his opportunity. While she was away, Croker asked, "Where's the standard?" "Buried in my dugout." "Huh. How about the annals and stuff?" "They're in there too, but they should be all right for now. If we have another quake or a lot more rain, though, I don't know. We'll go after that as soon as we've got our people dug out." "How come she brought Singh and the Shadow Master here?" He understood. "Because I'm the physician, and they're both about half a heartbeat short of dying. Maybe if she'd had somebody of her own handy, whom she trusted..." He let it trail off. He would never trust his woman completely, where ambition might enter the equation. "She's probably less risk than you think. I think I figured it out last night."
"What?"
"Her relationship to Kina. How it works and why it exists. I think I got it."
"You have time to think when you're out playing spook?"
"Some. So tell me about my sweetie and Kina.
Begin with the premise that she's pretty damned bright.
Oh, yeah.
He smiled at some private thought. Not to mention pretty strong-willed.
You going to waste my time with understatements, or are you going to get on with it?
Onward. I think that a long time ago, before we ever got to Gaz Lee, when she first showed unexpected signs of regaining some power, she understood that some force down here meant to use her, and she let it happen. And that lulled that force into thinking that it had claimed a slave, when in fact, what it really got was a parasite. Several possible responses stirred behind Croker's eyes, but he said only,
"Go on."
That's pretty much it. While the goddess was using her, Lady was limpeting herself to Kina so she could suck off power she could use herself. I think she's burrowed in so deep, Kina can't get rid of her without crippling herself. I think Lady may even have some control over what the goddess does.
Kina got real upset last night. The Daughter of Night was being threatened directly, and when she tried to help the kid, even though she managed to get really destructive, her efforts never quite hit their mark.
And you think Lady...
Yes, he's right. Lady stepped into the weak light. No telling how long she'd been behind us, listening. She was the darkness when it came to moving quietly. That doesn't leave this place. So long as they think I'm the real thing, the end results will be the same as if I were. I discovered some interesting mold formations developing on the wall in front of me. I gave them my devoted attention. Croker said,
"If you're like some kind of leech or something, how come Kina hasn't tried to get rid of you?"
"Most of Kina is asleep. The part that isn't is interested only in bringing on the Year of the Skulls. And she's pretty stupid besides. She didn't understand what I'd done till recently. She may ponder it for years before she decides to do something about it." I said,
"She does seem to look at time in a different way."
Lady continued, "I'm concerned that my beloved sister may have solved the puzzle too, or will, now that she has the girl. The girl knows." I said,
"Catcher's hiding out in the same place she has ever since she got here." The old man knew where that was. Croker said, "I'd love to take a crack, but we've only got 10 hours to get ready for another night."
I understood. But boy, would it have been nice to get Catcher tucked safely into the past. 20 minutes of speculation did nothing to unravel Catcher's ultimate motives. Not even Lady could guess what Catcher really wanted or what she might do next. "She was that way when she was 4 years old," Lady said. "Hell, she was born unpredictable." I must have looked too interested. The story stopped there. I didn't overlook the fact that neither Croker nor Lady ever referred to their child in any way that might suggest that she was anything but an unnatural monster entirely unconnected to them. Chapter 73.
I watched Weezer direct the winkling out of a small shadow that had worked its way up close to the perimeter of One Eye's safe zone before going into hiding from the light.
Lady had modified One Eye's amulet so that they could be used to detect shadows. Our guys were rooting them out with great enthusiasm, particularly considering that most of those guys were exhausted. I said, "I can't believe that old boy isn't dead yet." On cue, Weezer tried to hawk up a lung. He was ancient when he joined the company years ago, and was dying of consumption even then. The only thing good that could be said about his situation was that he somehow managed to stay alive. Tide grunted. He didn't care about Weezer. Although he was supposedly helping excavate our bunker, he spent more attention on his mother, who snored ferociously in the shelter of a tent that had belonged to somebody who'd not survived the night. His face was stone. His eyes were ice. If another Yuan Bao came anywhere near him, his hackles rose. He was just waiting for somebody to say something, anything, that he could interpret as an insult, so he could spend his embarrassment in a good fight. When they dug Gota and One Eye out, not only were they passed out drunk, they were on the same pallet, wearing less than their usual apparel. So that was his tonk game, eh? I worked hard not to crack a smile. Tide might decide I was truly family after all and take it out on me. I hoped he wouldn't confront One-Eye. One-Eye would have a murderous hangover when he woke up. One-Eye with a hangover is not somebody to annoy. Croaker was sorely exercised, I knew. The little wizard had rendered himself useless at a time when his talents were needed desperately. Everywhere you looked, people were scurrying to rebuild and to get ready for another night with a leaky shadow gate. Lady and the old man hoped Long Shadow would help improve that situation, but no good news had been reported yet. They were having trouble getting him out of his shell. They had no time to concentrate. Messengers came and went continuously, interrupting constantly. Another dozen shovels full and I think we can get it open, I told Tidae. I had conscripted a door somebody else had stolen from the ruins. I'd used it to close off the little workroom I'd managed to complete just in time for the earthquake. One of Croker's guards appeared. The captain wishes to see you, Standard Bearer. Wonderful. I'll be right back, Tidae. I clambered up out of the muddy hole and headed for Croker's dugout. I ducked inside. The crowd had thinned out. Amazing. What you need, boss? He and Lady had Long Shadow stretched out on a table made out of another stolen door. The Shadow Master was too long for it. His feet hung off. Lady had managed to eliminate the sorcerer's protective shell. Fellow just came in from Blade's Bunch, Mergen. They've found Howler. He's still buried in the snow. They don't know if he's unconscious or dead. He's been there long enough he should have froze to death. But he was one of the Taken. They did not die easily, especially not Howler. I glanced at Lady. She told me, I can't tell from here. Croaker said, they also caught Cordy Mather and his gang. They asked what to do about them. He was poking and squeezing Long Shadow's limbs, looking for broken bones, I guess. He told Lady, this man hasn't eaten right for a long time.
Maybe he was worried about poison.
She stared down at the Shadow Master's mask. She started to reach. You sure you've canceled all of his spells? The old man asked.
You can't ever be sure with somebody you don't know. Mergen, did you ever see him with this off?
The messenger from Blade pricked up his ears. He was collecting stories to share with the guys. No, how would I manage that? I never saw him before right now. She took the hint. Croaker said, what I want, Mergen, is for you to round up some men, including One-Eye, even if you have to carry him and go help Blade, and maybe keep an eye on him, Etchief. Him and Mather being such good buddies. Be careful with Howler, but bring him in if you can. I grunted unhappily. Lady took hold of Long Shadow's mask. The old man asked me, you found out anything more about the planting season around here? I gave him a baffled look. That was an odd shift of subject. But he did that. His mind sometimes ran a dozen directions at once. He continued, we've got to get crops planted if we mean to stay here. That, or pull a Mogaba and start eating each other. Lady pulled the Shadow Master's mask away. Long Shadow arced as though stabbed, his eyes opened, but he could do nothing else. He'd been constrained and silenced by a master. I asked, why don't we move into his place? There's supplies in there. Some. An overlook is sure a whole hell of a lot drier inside than here. I don't recognize him. The Shadow Master's face was gaunt and oriental, but pale as lard. There were just a few teeth in his open mouth, supporting Croaker's assessment of his diet. He looked like a guy who'd suffered repeated bouts with rickets or scurvy or something like that.
Neither do I, Lady said.
She sounded badly disappointed. I do believe she really expected him to be one of the Taken, or at least someone she'd encountered in the past. I asked, is this a problem?
I was hoping for a break. Something to make life easier.
You picked the wrong husband. Boss, can I get out there and back before dark? The messenger nodded.
Easy. It's only 4 miles. There's road most of the way, and it's still in good shape.
Smoke groaned again. There was a taint of fear there this time. Lady frowned his way. He was a problem she wished she had time to explore.
Get a move on, Croaker told me. It'll get dark eventually.
darkness always comes. I love walking in the rain. I beckoned the messenger, went back outside. A walk in the rain wouldn't be that awful. I couldn't get any more wet. I told Ty Day, the captain wants us to go collect some prisoners.
Chapter 74. There are disadvantages to traveling wet. You get a lot of chafing, for example. By the time I caught up with Blade, I had blisters on my feet and a raw spot inside my right thigh that burned awfully, and I still had to go back the other way. Ty Day was no happier than I was. None of the guys tagging along were cheerful. They had to take turns carrying one eye. The runt's most ambitious effort yet had been to roll onto his side to puke over the edge of his litter. I'd had a notion about sneaking on up to peek into Soulcatcher's Ravine. It was a notion that died stillborn about the time we left the road for the forest. A few hundred yards of slip-sliding around in the mud and pine needles and, in the shady places, snow on steepening hillsides quickly convinced me that this was no day to demonstrate individual initiative. One thing I could be sure of. Soulcatcher would be around later. I flopped down beside Blade. "Have a good trip down?" I asked Mather. "Sorry we couldn't reserve better weather for you." Blade chuckled. So did Willow Swan, who observed, "This is about as good as it gets, Cordy. We did save the best for you." "I knew you were my pals." I asked, "Where's our boy Howler?" None of this country looked the same as it had during the night from the air. Swan pointed uphill, southward, toward where some tall evergreens held on to a thick clot of shadow.
"Buried in some snow up there."
The guys with me dropped One Eye's litter. The little wizard moaned, but didn't yet have enough ambition to curse or threaten anyone. I asked, "What did you guys do to convince Lady she could let you run around loose?" Blade chuckled.
"She convinced him by pointing out that anybody who doesn't stay close and friendly won't have any protection from the shadows."
I grunted. "It's a realization that's going around as people begin to examine their consciences." It was the kind of question that has led many men to select options for which they may be excoriated later by people with full bellies sitting in front of cozy fires. Anybody got any grease? Even anything that will pass for grease? My old pal, Ty Day, was lugging a glob of lard, in case we had to do some cooking. Yuang Bao never ceased to amaze. Though their religion had to be an offshoot of the Guni, somehow they did eat meat, and unlike the Vedna, that did include pork. The swamp did not allow them to become too picky. Ty Day must have lugged that lard for years, using it over and over. No matter. Lard was exactly what I needed. I dropped my trousers, treated the insides of my thighs to a generous spread. This'll keep me going for a while. One Eye began thrashing on his litter, fighting his blanket and complaining about being wet. His problem was trivial. It wasn't raining anymore. He threw up over the side again, hacking and gagging, then settled down to sleep.
"That looks pretty raw already," Swan told me.
"Cuss it better,"
Mather suggested.
"Some reunion. Our old pal Cordy got above himself since he's been hobnobbing with the woman."
I said, "Let's go do our wizard mining." Blade said,
"I really don't want to do this."
"No shit. Me neither.
Tell you what, why don't we let Swan and Mather get him? We'll stay right here so somebody can get word back to camp in case anything goes wrong."
Mather said,
"The sky is definitely starting to sound like an officer. You get a couple of field promotions during the campaign."
"I'm a god." I let Ty Day help me up. He hadn't sprawled on the ground. His muscles were still loose. He started heading the direction Swan had indicated earlier. Blade asked,
"What about your pet?"
He chucked a pine cone at One Eye. One Eye barely twitched.
"He's got liabilities enough.
Let sleeping sorcerers lie." One Eye sat up. He slurred,
"I heard that, kid."
Then he collapsed again. I said, "I think I'll leave him here and take the other one back on the stretcher."
an idea which proved popular immediately. Not even One Eye came out against it. He was busy snoring again. There was no evidence that Howler had moved an inch since his fall. There was just the hole where he'd gone into the snow, and at its bottom, about 8 feet deep, a bundle of dark rags. A light dust of loose snow had blown in on top of him.
"Hey! Look in here!"
a soldier called from maybe 30 feet away up the slope past Howler.
"What you got?"
I asked. I wasn't walking 10 feet if I didn't have to.
"Looks like a dead wolf."
I worked my way up there. "Some bitch, guys.
He found a dead wolf."
I knelt. Looks like it got caught by a shadow. Evidence on the slope suggested that it had been sneaking toward Howler when bad luck got in its way. Then it had tried to run. It hadn't been alone, of course, but the tracks indicated a very small pack. "I didn't know they had wolves down here," somebody said. "Now you do." The death of the wolf didn't seem critical, except to tell us that a shadow had been around here last night and might still be hiding somewhere nearby. "Be careful if you're anywhere that's dark." I went back down to check Howler. He hadn't moved. Of course. "He alive?" Swan asked. Blade suggested,
"Get a long stick and poke him."
I said, "Let's dig him out."
"That's smart."
"He won't do anything till we get him out of the hole. I would not have in his position. Always let some other fool do the work if he insists." The snow was old snow. Its surface had melted and refrozen numerous times. It was hard and heavy. Luckily, Howler wasn't really 8 feet under. He'd passed through 8 feet of snow, but that snow lay on a steep hillside and was only about 4 feet thick going in at the most direct angle. I had a notion. "Don't scatter that stuff too far. We might want to use some." "There ain't exactly a shortage," Swan grumbled. Ty Day, I noted, never offered to help. He stood back with his hand on his sword, alert, One Eye cocked toward One Eye. Perhaps his impulses were evil. His vigilance proved unnecessary. As the more daring men brushed snow off Howler, one of them announced, "He's froze solid!" A huge sigh of relief ripped through the crowd. "Excellent," I observed. "Here's what we'll do then." An hour later, we had the little wizard tied to a carrying pole, packed inside a layer of snow 6 inches thick. "Just to keep him from spoiling on the way," I told the guys, some of whom had had to give up ragged bits of clothing to help keep the snow around Howler. They all whined and groaned and groused and wanted to know why we couldn't just pack him in with the other one. They were going to break One Eye's heart. They didn't love him anymore. Chapter 75.
"Use this salve," Croker told me, "and try to keep it as clean and dry as you can."
I was walking bow-legged before we got back. I scowled at One Eye, who was seated on the floor near Croker's fire, not saying a word. He looked like he wished we would let him fall asleep for a year, so the pain would go away. He was still in such bad shape that he didn't have energy enough to complain. Mother Goda was more resilient. Her youth, I suppose. She and Uncle Doge had been working on the family dugout when Ty Day and I returned from our adventure. Nobody, including Uncle Doge, had anything to say. I ignored his long absence. I had no time for Nguyen Bao mystery games. I left them stirring the mud in an effort to get a shelter up before night fell again. Lady had Howler on the door table examining him. She concluded,
"He should recover."
I asked, "You get issued 9 lives when you get taken? That little shit is starting to look stubborner than the limper was. We killed that asshole 6 times. We thought, and he just kept coming back." Lady said,
"No, but anybody who has the drive to become a wizard of his level is the sort who wastes no opportunity to further prepare for any imaginable possibility."
I asked the old man, "What's it look like out there?" There had been dramatic changes in the few hours I was away, besides the passage of the rain. Most of the survivors had been collected either in the vicinity of the headquarters group or directly below the Shadow Gate.
A lot of man-hours had gone into locating every surviving piece of workable bamboo. Lady's reloading factory was hard at work, too, but the effort there was little more than symbolic of the leadership's commitment to continue the struggle.
Looks better than I thought it would. Lady got Long Shadow stabilized. That should mean we're back to the slow leakage we had before he got hurt. If he mends, all right, we'll have him shut it down in a couple of days.
We going to be able to control him?
Oh, yeah. You've seen statues of dead generals that had more freedom of action than she's left him.
Lady looked up from her work. She wore the tiniest of smiles, but it betrayed the confident amusement of an old, old evil.
She is the darkness.
Smoke was for sure right about that. I said, wouldn't we be better off if we moved into Overlook?
Maybe. And we might do that,
once we get straightened out and know where everybody is, and figure out where, for right now, their loyalties lie. Speaking of which, Uncle Doge is back. He's out there helping my mother-in-law and acting like he was never gone.
I heard.
I'm wondering how he managed to survive, especially last night. Lady looked at me like I had sparked a surprise thought. She said, "Watch Howler. Call me if he moves. I'll be right outside." She hurried out the doorway. I looked at Croker. He shrugged.
"I don't ask anymore."
She looks pretty ragged.
"Don't we all? But maybe we'll get to rest up now. If we get the Shadowgate under control, there won't be anybody to aggravate us for a long time. If ever."
Mogaba was out there, but he had no patron anymore. That meant that nobody could cover his ass, magically. He would have to back off. And the Prabhrindra Dra might not live long enough to become a problem. He had to evade both Shadows and Goblin to reach friendly territory. And even so-called friendly territory would not be very friendly if he couldn't pull together a band big enough to look out for itself. Peasants are notoriously cruel to fleeing soldiers when they catch them at a disadvantage. Possibly that is because soldiers are so cruel to peasants when the advantage lies in their hands, though many from the hyper-refined warrior classes have insisted it springs from the beastly nature of the peasantry.
Can you get over to the Shadow Gate?
Me?
Now. You, now, before dark. Carrying the standard to test my theory about what it is and to help cover the troops there, if I'm right.
I can try, but I'm in pretty lousy shape.
You could ride.
That was asking for another set of galled spots entirely, but he was right. With a slightly nasty smile, he observed,
"You could have your understudy do it for you, if you had one."
So, he knew Sleepy was missing. I needed to check on the kid first chance I got. Lady pushed back inside. She wasn't a big woman, but she had a big presence. I was always surprised when I saw her after a separation because I always remembered her about a foot taller. She told me, "Your friend Doge isn't just a priest from some obscure cult. He's a sorcerer. Very minor, less than one eye in ability, but he's carrying something, an amulet, an artifact, what exactly I couldn't determine, that protects him from shadows." Croker looked at me like I ought to have known all about that.